There's an old Chinese proverb that says, govern a family as you would a small fish, very gently. It's safe to say that Shante Kimes did not follow this philosophy. Her son, Kent Walker, calls his memoir of life with her, son of a grifter. Kent Walker told Anne Strangechamps how he learned his mother was different from other mothers.
Well, she'd steal cars, drive them off the lot. The funny thing about that is it kind of worked for her because she was able to talk to cops that, hey, they gave me the car. I thought I was just test driving it, so she wouldn't get in trouble for that too often. Shoplifting has always been part of the deal from my earliest memory. That's always been there. Also, the houses we lived in were always on a scam. The food we ate. I don't remember Mom having a real job ever, but we always ate well.
Your mother also got you to work as an accomplice with her. In fact, she taught you some of her skills. What kinds of things did she have you do?
She wanted me to be the well-behaved young man for a couple of reasons. One, it makes a great distraction when you go into stores and they say, oh, what a well-behaved young man. Well, Mom fills her purse up. Also, later on, that was pretty important for her because she didn't want to look like a struggling single mom. She needed to have a well-behaved son to help with her cooing of her millionaire search.
When you got old enough to, begin to figure out that shoplifting, at least other people wouldn't think shoplifting was okay, did you ever say anything to her? What would she say? How did you guys talk about it?
Well, I tell my son to take out the trash. He's 8 years old. And he doesn't. It was with that same type of authority, I guess, Mom would say, hey, I need you to distract this person for me. So I was my taking out. It was my chore. That's all I knew. I was about 12 years old, and I went out and stole a surfboard, and I got caught. And it was kind of one of those defining moments in my life because I remember that she didn't get angry that I stole the surfboard. She got angry that I got caught. And I really thought I was going to get to jail. And so that's when I start turning. And then when we got to Hawaii, I started taking stuff out of her purse and put it back on the shelf and became one of her biggest sources of frustration because she realized that I wasn't going to be like her. I was going to be the opposite of her, and she didn't like that at all.
Was there ever a time when you just said to her, no, I won't do that?
Yep, a couple times. Cost me dearly. When I started getting bigger, I was a big kid. I was almost 6 foot tall by the time I was 13. And I could fight back. So she started getting more creative with how she tried to control me physically. She'd like take an electric razor and swing it lasso style, nail me right between the shoulder blades a couple times. Even when I was older, she put me in the hospital one time. And it was pretty ugly stuff.
There's a story you tell about the time she punched you in the mouth. I think that was in the middle of committing a crime. Can you tell me about that?
I was in Palm Springs at the time. I was probably about 6, 7 years old, and I was sitting on the hood of our car. And Mom was inside filling her bags with dresses. And someone must have seen her because she came running out of the store, and the manager of the store was chasing her. It was another woman. And Mom just ran right by me, threw the bag in the back of the seat of the car, and then the lady caught up with her and grabbed her arm. And then we heard the sirens. So this was a pretty scary time. And Mom she had an act of inspiration, I guess. She balled up her fist and she came around the house and clocked me right in the mouth. And my lips split open, blood all over the place. Cops just pulled into the parking lot right after she'd hit me. And she's screaming at the top of her lungs that the store manager had hit me. And the cops bought it. They put cuffs on her. Mom throws me in the car and says, I got to get my son to the hospital, and I end up getting stitches at a physician's house.
Did she apologize?
Never once.
There's also the time she sent you into the house to retrieve a file folder.
Yeah, that was in Newport Beach. And that house really sticks out because it had the ugliest red carpet, and we'd lived there for about a week, and she was in the car. She asked me to run upstairs and grab a folder for her, and I did it. And as I was walking through the front door, the house exploded. My mother was a lot of arsons in her history, but she never got good at it. I think she used too much. I don't think she meant to blow the house up. But, it didn't blow it to smithereens, but the concussion was enough to throw me into the front yard. And, that was a pretty scary time.
So how did you feel about your mother after she did stuff like this to you?
At that young age, it's all I knew. I loved my mom. I still do. I mean, it's easy to talk. People are more interested in the horrible stuff, but there was a lot of good stuff also. She can make you feel loved more than anyone, whether you were her mate or whether you were her son. as intensely as she can do things bad, she can do things that make you feel good just as intensely. You know, we were telling the book a story. One time I got beat up by a kid who was quite a bit older than me, and I come home crying. My mother, in 30 seconds, was out the door. I had to take her to where this boy lived. And long story short, the man came out, had a little bit of a flippant attitude about the boy's father. And my mom grabbed about 6 foot of his garden hose and beat the hell out of him with it. So you get that kind of shield. You feel kind of invincible sometimes, too. And she never got caught for anything. And if she did get caught, it was only for a couple of days or something. So it didn't seem that wrong. I always thought when people got caught, they went to jail if they did something really bad. You know, and it was kind of confusing when I was young.
After she divorced your dad, your mother then married a really wealthy real estate developer, Ken Kimes. And
yes.
Now that she had a really wealthy new husband, she continued to commit crimes.
They got worse. They not just continued, they actually got worse. That doesn't make sense. You know, here she is, a millionaire, she got her goal. That's one of the biggest frustrations with my mother. Everyone thinks she's this great con artist. She's not. She failed at everything that she did. And her biggest score was Ken Kimes, my stepfather. And she blew that one, too. She destroyed him. Ken was a very paranoid man, very cheap man. He didn't mind driving stolen Cadillacs. He liked the thrill of getting away with it. I think that my mother brought a sense of excitement to the relationship that he kind of got addicted to. And it cost him millions and his reputation also.
You said things got worse after they got married. Is that when she got into recruiting maids from Mexico and keeping, well, I mean, she wound up being tried for slavery, right?
She ended up getting convicted for slavery. There's always been maids in my memory from day one. In fact, I used to dream in Spanish before I spoke English, and I can't speak any Spanish now, so maybe it'll come back to me. But the treatment of the maids did change when Ken came into the picture. In Palm Springs, before Ken was there, the maids would go home on weekends and come back on Mondays. Their boyfriends would come over and have dinner with us sometimes. When Ken came into the picture, they started wearing uniforms. They didn't go home anymore, and they started running away. I remember feeling sorry for them a lot, and I remember they'd always come up to me and ask me to go get them their personal items, or if they, you know, a lot of times they were fearful, and they'd try to hide behind me from Mom.
Did they ask you for help? Did they ask you to help them escape?
In Hawaii, I think I helped half a dozen maids leave. They'd be teary-eyed, and that's when Mom and Ken started drinking pretty heavy, so they'd pass out, and Ken always carried about $4,000 or $5,000 in his pocket, so I'd just take out the money and go buy their airline tickets and sneak them out in the middle of the night and let them fly home.
So in the middle of all this sort of life of chaos, to put it kindly, you were still living pretty well. I mean, your mom and Ken had millions.
We were living from, if anyone from the outside looking in would have thought that I was the luckiest kid in the world. The house we lived in Hawaii, well, the one we ended up living in Hawaii, was absolutely gorgeous. Right on the water, Diamond Head and Pacific Ocean for the view, and I loved it. We appeared to be the American dream writ large. I mean, it was more than most people could even hope for. But on the inside, it wasn't like that.
I guess a lot of people would wonder why, when you got old enough to realize what was going wrong and how wrong everything was, why you didn't try to leave, try to get help? But
I did. Several times I tried to leave. She pulled me back in. I left one time when I was a freshman in high school. I was pulled back in by my stepfather and the love of my brother. My stepfather begged me to come back to bring peace back into the house. I left my senior year in high school. But she pulled me back in. You know, I had to be her good soldier, you know, in Las Vegas. I left again to join the Army, and I was a helicopter pilot in the Army. She destroyed that career because she needed me to be her soldier for the maids case. People have to be subjected to the type of force this woman could create. It was beyond charisma. It was beyond energy. And the best way I can describe it is trying to run away from her is like swimming in quicksand.
When you were 12... your mom gave birth to your half-brother, Kenny. And during Kenny's childhood, your mom spent some time in jail. And you write in the book that Kenny's father and your stepfather, Ken Kimes, did grievous, irreversible damage to Kenny while raising him alone. What did Ken do that was so harmful?
Well, when Mom was arrested and put in jail for the slavery case and the first case, that was a pretty tender age for Kenny. He'd been sheltered to a great degree. And Ken had changed. He became very paranoid, actually antisocial. He had the feeling that everyone was after him. There was enemies that Mom created after his money. Ken was looking at losing his fortune, looking at his freedom. And he started teaching Kenny lessons like being paranoid. Don't have compassion for anybody. Everyone's a mark. Everyone's vultures. You got to keep your guard up. General public is not people at all, you know. And I stand by that. We went round and round with that because I'm not trying to get my mom off the hook in any way, shape, or form. She is equally as responsible. But I believe wholeheartedly that those years alone with Ken, who I loved dearly, are probably more responsible for what Kenny turned into than anything else.
Did your mother involve Kenny even more in her activities than she had involved you?
Kenny did not get involved in criminal activities that I'm aware of until after she was released from prison for the Maids trial, which is the early 90s. His life and my life have a lot of similarities growing up, you know, in grade school and preteens. But there are significant differences also. One time when he was about 12 years old, I think he was, and I'd put some silly putty in my pocket with every intention to pay for it, and he freaked out. He couldn't believe that Big Brother was actually going to steal something. And it was one of the happiest moments of my life. I remember this is a good thing. This kid's being sheltered from some of the stuff I had to go through. But he had his own tensions he had to go through also that I was sheltered from. There was pressure being the heir to the millions.
There were times when you tried to turn your mother in to the authorities. What happened?
There were several times.
What happened when you tried that?
That's one of my frustrations. I have a lot of respect for law enforcement, and I praise God for them. But I did try to turn her in. I was a junior in high school, and I had had enough. And I went to the Honolulu Police Department and told them everything. In my mind, I was in a protective custody. For 3 days, I rode around with them, and I was interrogated, basically. Told them all about the fires, about the insurance scams, about the maids, about the cars that were stolen. The list is endless. And they made me believe that my life was at risk. But once I signed the statement, they made me wear a wire to try to find her one time. And all this is in 3 days. They dropped me off in Waikiki, and nothing happened.
Why did nothing happen?
Hindsight now, I think that it's illegal, the type of custody that I was in. The district attorney was not involved. And I think what might have happened, that one of the detectives might have gotten overzealous, and then my information was not admissible. That's the only explanation I can come up with, because that's one I've wrestled with for several years.
Had you thought before that if they kept going, they'd get to murder? Or was there always kind of a line? Did you always think that they'd stick to the cons and the stealing and the scams, but they wouldn't go as far as murder?
My biggest fault is the optimism I had for my family, especially for my brother. While it was happening, I always held out the hope that he would realize what was going on. And that, you know, Mom was getting older, that she'll settle down. My history, now looking back and writing about it in Son of a Grifter, realized how foolish I was. If someone told me, was she capable of murder, you know, before all this happened, I probably might have said yes, I'm not sure. But to this level, I should have seen it coming, but I didn't.
Kent Walker is the author of Son of a Grifter. He spoke with Ann Strangechamps. The murder that Kent referred to took place in 1998. Kent's mother, Shante Kimes, and her other son, Kenny, killed Irene Silverman. Shante was trying to steal Irene Silverman's $7.7 million mansion in Manhattan. Both Shante Kimes and Kenny Kimes are serving life sentences for that murder.